Welcome back to AI Unchained. The future isn't coming. It's already here. And honestly, today feels like one of those episodes where the future is moving a little faster than expected.
Faster or sloppier. Sometimes those two look the same in tech.
Fair point. But we've got some wild stuff today. We're talking about Meta literally building data centers in tents. Yes, tents. To keep up with the AI race. We've got Airbnb launching a new AI lab. And deep in the weeds, there's a new research paper questioning whether transformers even need the classic QKV structure we've all taken for granted.
Which is the nerdy way of saying the architecture behind basically every major AI system might be more flexible than we thought. Or maybe we've been wasting compute for years.
Exactly. And if that's true, this could be huge. Smaller models, faster training, cheaper inference. That's the kind of breakthrough that changes the economics of AI.
Hold on, though. Every 6 months, someone publishes a paper claiming transformers are inefficient or obsolete. And yet, here we are, still running transformers everywhere.
Sure, but sometimes those papers are the early signal. Remember April 24th? We talked about Tencent's Hi-3 model and said that efficiency might be the next big frontier.
I remember you declaring it the beginning of a new era. Yes.
And now look. Companies are scrambling for compute so badly that Meta is apparently copying Tesla's playbook and spinning up data centers in temporary structures.
Which, let's pump the brakes, might be less genius hack and more we ran out of time and GPUs.
Or it's speed over perfection. Ship the compute now, optimize later. That's very Tesla.
Or very expensive. The flip side is reliability, cooling, security, all the boring things that make data centers work. Tents are not exactly known for enterprise-grade uptime.
Wait. But that's exactly why this matters. If AI demand is so insane that companies are willing to improvise infrastructure, that tells you the scale of what's coming.
Or the scale of the hype cycle.
See, this is why we do the show together.
Someone has to keep you from declaring the singularity every Thursday.
Okay, but I'm also bullish on another story today. Airbnb's Brian Chesky launching a dedicated AI lab. We predicted something like this back on May 1st when we talked about companies quietly training on other models' outputs.
Yeah, the everyone becomes an AI company trend.
Exactly. Travel data, pricing, personalization, trip planning agents. Airbnb could turn into a full-on AI concierge platform.
Or they burn millions building an AI lab and end up with a slightly better chatbot for booking cabins.
You're no fun.
I'm realistic.
All right, so here's the roadmap for today. Scrappy data centers, AI labs popping up in unexpected places, and a research paper that might quietly challenge one of the core assumptions behind modern AI.
And somewhere in there, Jack will predict a $1 trillion company.
Minimum.
Let's get into it.
Okay, this one is a little nerdy, but I love it because it goes straight at the guts of how modern AI works. There's a new research thread asking a very basic question. Do transformers actually need 3 separate projections? Query, key, and value? The famous QKV.
And if you've ever wondered why every AI paper casually throws around those letters like everyone understands them, this is why we have to explain it.
Exactly. So quick translation into human language. When a transformer processes text, each token basically asks, what other words in this sentence matter to me? The query is the question. The keys are labels for the other words, and the values are the information you pull in if there's a match.
Right. Attention is basically a matching game.
Yes. And historically, we compute 3 separate linear projections of the same input vector to produce Q, K, and V. That's been baked into transformer architecture since the original 2017 paper.
But this new study is basically asking, are we doing extra work for no reason?
Exactly. The researchers did a systematic sweep of variants, like tying the projections together, reducing them, even removing some distinctions, to see if models actually need 3 independent matrices.
And that matters because every projection is compute and parameters. Multiply that across billions of tokens and trillion parameter models, it's expensive.
This is why I'm bullish on this line of research. If you can collapse or share these projections without hurting performance, you get cheaper models, faster inference, and potentially smaller hardware requirements.
Hold on though, we've seen this movie before. Architecture simplifications often work in small experiments, but break when you scale.
Maybe, but the interesting thing here is the researchers did a pretty broad comparison across QKV variants. The implication is that some of these components might be more redundant than we assumed.
Or the implication is we don't fully understand why transformers work yet.
Also true.
The flip side is that Q, K, and V separation might act like a kind of regularization. You give the model three different lenses on the same data. If you merge them too aggressively, you might lose representational flexibility.
But wait. If the performance stays the same with fewer projections, that means we've been overpaying in compute for years.
Or it means the benchmark tasks weren't sensitive enough to reveal the difference.
You're such a skeptic.
Someone has to be. Think about what happens when you push these architectures into reasoning tasks, multimodal input, or very long context windows. Those subtle representational differences could suddenly matter.
Okay, fair. But from an engineering perspective, this is exciting. If QKV can be partially shared or simplified, it means cheaper training and cheaper inference. And that's the real bottleneck right now.
I'll grant you that. Efficiency gains compound fast. Even a 5 to 10% reduction in attention compute would be massive at hyperscale.
Exactly. Every GPU hour matters when you're training frontier models.
But there's a second order risk here too. If everyone starts tweaking foundational transformer pieces, we could fragment architectures. Suddenly, every lab has slightly incompatible attention mechanisms.
That's already happening though. Mixture of experts, sliding window attention, linear attention, all these variants.
True. But QKV is one of the last sacred cows of the original transformer design.
Which is why I love that someone asked the question. It's like opening the engine of a Ferrari and asking, do we actually need three of these pistons?
If you remove the wrong piston, the car explodes.
Or it becomes twice as efficient.
Or both.
Look, my prediction. Within a couple years, we'll see transformer variants that compress or share QKV projections and quietly cut huge compute costs.
I'll take the opposite side. I think the three projection structure survives because it turns out to be a surprisingly stable design when you scale to giant models.
So we agree to disagree.
For now.
But speaking of architectural quirks that seemed harmless until engineers started poking at them, there's another weird design decision floating around the internet right now involving IPv6 URLs that's causing a surprisingly heated debate. Okay, this one cracked me up, but also made me kind of bullish. Meta is literally building AI data centers in tents. Not metaphorical tents, actual giant weatherproof tents in Ohio.
Hold on though, when you say tents, people might imagine camping gear. These are massive industrial structures, like 125,000 square feet each.
Right, fair. Think aircraft hangar made out of tension fabric. But the key thing is speed. Meta built 5 of these between April and June. That's insanely fast for a data center.
And they're doing it because the normal way is too slow. Traditional data centers take years to permit and build. The AI race is moving so fast that if your chips sit in warehouses waiting for a building, you're losing.
Exactly. And here's why this matters. AI compute is the new oil field. If you can spin up capacity faster than your competitors, you win training cycles. You launch models sooner. That's the entire game right now.
I get the logic. But I'm not so sure stuffing billions of dollars of GPUs inside giant tents powered by gas turbines is the long-term solution.
Wait. That's the genius part. They're also using 200 megawatts of modular gas turbines nearby. This is the xAI trick. Bring your own power instead of waiting years for the grid.
Or, put differently, bypass the grid because the grid can't handle AI demand.
Which is exactly why this could be huge. The companies that figure out instant data centers win. Tesla did this in 2018 when they threw up that famous Fremont tent to crank out Model 3s.
Yeah, and that was also a sign of production chaos at the time.
It worked, though.
It worked eventually. But there were safety concerns, quality issues, all kinds of problems. The flip side here is reliability. Data centers are usually concrete bunkers for a reason. Cooling, fire suppression, physical security, weather.
These are weatherproof, though.
Weatherproof-ish. We're talking about multi-gigawatt AI clusters and chips worth billions of dollars. And they're in fabric structures.
Industrial fabric.
Jack, if a tornado hits Ohio, I'm not feeling great about industrial fabric.
Okay, but you're missing the macro point. Meta plans to spend up to $145 billion on AI infrastructure. $145 billion. If Wall Street is mad about that, Meta stock is already down about 5% this year. You better believe Zuck wants results fast.
And that's exactly why this might be risky. When companies start improvising infrastructure because the race is so intense, that's when you get overbuilding.
Or you get the biggest computing platform in history.
Or you get stranded assets. Remember the fiber boom in the early 2000s? Companies buried way more fiber than demand needed at the time.
But eventually, that fiber became the backbone of the internet.
20 years later.
Fair point.
Also, there's a weird detail in the reporting. Meta apparently already finished its new model, Muse Spark, but developers can't access it because the APIs keep getting delayed.
Which might explain the panic buildout. They want massive compute ready before competitors lap them.
Or it shows the bottleneck isn't just compute. It's software, integration, developer tooling. Throwing tents full of GPUs at the problem doesn't fix that.
Sure, but compute is still the choke point. Training frontier models takes ridiculous amounts of hardware. If Meta suddenly spins up gigawatts of capacity in months instead of years, that's a strategic advantage.
Unless OpenAI, Google, and xAI are doing the same thing, which they probably are.
That's the wild part. The AI infrastructure race now looks like Mad Max. Gas turbines, tent cities, billions in chips, everyone racing to plug them in.
And Wall Street is watching $145 billion in CapEx and saying, are we sure this isn't a bubble?
I'm going to take the other side. If AI becomes the core interface for everything, search, work, apps, robotics, then whoever owns the biggest compute stack prints money.
Big if.
I'm bullish.
I'm cautious.
So we agree to disagree on tent cities as the future of AI infrastructure.
For now. But the bigger question this raises is who actually wins this arms race? Because the spending numbers across the industry are starting to get kind of insane.
Okay, this one is interesting. Brian Chesky, Airbnb CEO, apparently wants to launch a brand new AI lab. And here's why this matters. This is not some random founder jumping into AI. This guy was literally in the room during the OpenAI drama last year. He helped broker Sam Altman's return after the board tried to fire him. That means he's seen the inside mechanics of the biggest AI company on Earth.
Hold on, though. Being friends with Sam Altman doesn't automatically mean you can build a successful AI lab. Running Airbnb and building frontier AI models are very different games.
Sure. But Chesky isn't some tourist in tech. Airbnb is basically a design-first company, and the reporting says the lab might focus on user interaction and design around AI. That's huge, because right now most AI labs are obsessed with the models, the raw intelligence, but the user experience is kind of terrible.
I mean, yes and no. ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, they're pretty usable. The bigger issue is the underlying models are insanely expensive to train. We're talking billions of dollars in compute. Chesky launching a lab doesn't magically solve that.
Wait. He doesn't need to compete with OpenAI on raw models. That's the mistake people are making. The next wave might be interface. Think of it like the early internet. Netscape didn't build the internet infrastructure. They built the browser.
The flip side is we've already seen 100-inch eye interface startups. Everyone says the same thing. We'll build the layer on top. And then OpenAI releases a feature and wipes them out.
But Airbnb has something most of those startups don't. Distribution. Imagine booking travel through an AI that actually understands your preferences. Hey, I want a quiet cabin 2 hours from San Francisco with good hiking. Boom. It plans the whole trip.
That's just a feature, though. That doesn't require a new AI lab.
Maybe. But Chesky has been publicly saying the current LLMs weren't ready for Airbnb to partner with. That's telling. If someone that close to the ecosystem says the tech isn't there yet, maybe the interface and interaction layer really is the missing piece.
Or he's just frustrated with the current tools. A lot of CEOs are. But starting a lab while still running Airbnb? That's where I get skeptical. The reporting literally says he's not going into founder mode and someone else will run it.
Yeah, but he'll be the founding chair.
Which also means micromanaging. The article even hints at that. Whoever runs the lab has to deal with a chair known as a micromanager. That can kill innovation pretty fast.
I actually think that could work here. Chesky is famous for obsessing over design details. Airbnb's product got dramatically better when he leaned into that. If he applies that philosophy to AI interaction, how humans actually talk to these systems, that could be powerful.
Maybe, but there's another angle here. Silicon Valley is starting to look like a gold rush where every billionaire wants their own AI lab. Elon has one. Zuckerberg basically turned Meta into one. Now Chesky wants one. At some point, the economics stop making sense.
I'm bullish on this trend, though. More labs means more experimentation. Frontier labs are optimizing for bigger models. Someone like Chesky could focus on making AI actually usable for normal people.
Unless he ends up competing with OpenAI directly, which would be awkward, considering he literally helped get Sam Altman his job back.
That part is wild. Imagine mentoring someone and then launching a competing lab a year later.
Silicon Valley friendships are flexible.
Very flexible. And honestly, this could signal something bigger. The AI stack might be splitting into two camps, model builders and experience builders.
Okay, that'll grant you. If Chesky focuses purely on how humans interact with AI, not the giant models themselves, then maybe there's room there.
So you're not fully convinced?
I'm cautiously intrigued, which is about as optimistic as I get.
I'll take it. And speaking of tech leaders jumping into AI plays, there's another story that kind of rhymes with this, but takes it in a very different direction. So here's a fascinating one. Apple just approved the first standalone AI agent on its Messages for Business platform. The company's called Poke. 10-person startup already relayed something like 100 million messages since March. That's crazy adoption for something that's basically texting an AI to do stuff for you.
Hold on, though. When you say AI agent, what are we actually talking about here? Because people hear that phrase and imagine some autonomous robot assistant. This sounds more like a chatbot with extra steps.
No, here's why this matters. The interface is texting. You literally message the agent like you would a friend, plan my day, edit this photo, turn off my lights, whatever. And it handles the workflow behind the scenes. No app, no prompt engineering, no command line. Just texting.
Okay, but texting an assistant, that's been around for a decade. Remember Magic? That startup where you could text anything and humans or automation would do it?
Yes, exactly. But now it's AI native and scalable. That's the big difference. Magic needed armies of humans. Poke has 10 employees and has already processed 100 million messages.
Or it's just spamming cheap LLM responses over messaging platforms.
Wait. You're missing the Apple angle. Apple almost never lets third-party agents sit inside its messaging ecosystem like this. Messages for Business was traditionally airlines, retailers, hotels, basically companies talking to customers. Now you've got an AI agent sitting there acting like a service layer.
The flip side is, it's not actually open. This isn't Apple throwing the gates wide open to AI agents. They approved one company. That's very Apple. Tight control.
Sure, but it's a signal. WWDC is literally days away. There are rumors Apple's going to open the App Store to AI agents and launch a revamped Siri. If they start letting agents live inside core interfaces like messages, this could be huge.
I'm not so sure. Apple historically hates intermediaries. Why would they let some startup own the text your assistant experience when they're about to ship a new Siri?
Because Apple moves slow. Startups move fast. Poke already works across SMS, Telegram, WhatsApp, and now iMessage. They're building the cross-platform AI layer.
Or Apple is just observing them as an experiment. That's a very Apple move. Let a startup prove the use case, then copy it natively.
Sure. But even then, the startup wins if it becomes the default interface early. Look at the numbers. Launched in March, 100 million messages already. That means people are actually using it daily.
Or they're testing it out of curiosity. Message volume doesn't equal retention.
Fair point. But investors clearly think there's something there. Spark Capital, General Catalyst, they just added another $10 million on top of a $15 million seed round. Valuation's already at $300 million.
Which honestly sounds rich for a 10-person company that's basically a wrapper around messaging APIs and LLMs.
That's every AI startup right now.
Exactly my point.
But the interface shift is the real story. Think about it. Apps disappear. Agents become the interface. Instead of opening five apps, calendar, fitness, smart home, you just text one agent.
That sounds nice in theory. In reality, agents screw things up. If an agent edits your photos, schedules your calendar, controls your house, that's a lot of trust for a system that hallucinates.
But texting is actually the safest interface. It's slow, and conversational. You can confirm actions. Do you want me to schedule this? Yes. It's not some autonomous background process messing with your life.
Unless it starts doing things automatically, which every agent company eventually wants.
Okay, but imagine the upside. Apple users already spend hours in iMessage every day. If AI agents live there, you've basically embedded AI into the most used interface on the phone.
Or Apple rolls out an AI Siri that does the same thing and Poke gets Sherlocked in 6 months.
That's the risk, absolutely. But if Apple really does open the App Store to AI agents like the rumors suggest, then Poke being first into messages is a massive distribution advantage.
I'll believe the AI agent App Store when I see it. Apple doesn't like chaos in its ecosystem.
Fair. But if WWDC shows even a hint of Apple leaning into agents, this little 10-person startup sitting inside iMessage suddenly looks very, very well positioned.
Or very, very temporary.
All right, so we're split. You think it's a test balloon? I think it's the start of agent-native interfaces on the iPhone.
Yeah, and honestly, WWDC next week probably settles that debate pretty quickly, which actually ties into the next thing everyone in tech is watching right now.
All right, that's a wrap on a packed episode. We hit the surge in AI investment, the latest moves from big tech trying to lock down their ecosystems, and of course, the political chess match around AI regulation. If there's one theme today, it's acceleration. Everything is speeding up. New models, new funding, new power players. And honestly, I'm bullish. This could be huge.
Hold on, though. Everything speeding up is exactly what makes me nervous. When capital floods in this quickly and governments are still figuring out basic rules, you get bubbles, misuse, and a lot of broken promises. The flip side of rapid innovation is rapid mistakes. We've seen that movie before in tech.
Sure. But remember when everyone said cloud adoption would stall because enterprises were too cautious? 10 years later, it's the backbone of the internet. I feel the same energy here. The infrastructure for AI is getting built right now.
I'll give you that comparison, but cloud computing didn't come with questions about deepfakes influencing elections or autonomous decision systems making mistakes at scale. The stakes are higher. I'm not so sure the market alone will handle that responsibly.
Wait. Are you saying the innovation wave slows down because regulators step in?
I'm saying it might need to, or at least it will hit friction. That's the part the AI solves everything crowd tends to ignore.
Okay, but friction isn't failure. Sometimes it just means the tech gets better guardrails. And if you're building right now, you're early in what could be the defining platform shift of the next decade.
Or the early innings of a hype cycle that shakes out brutally. Both things can be true.
Fair. All right. Before we sign off, bold predictions time. Here's mine. Within 2 years, AI agents will handle a meaningful chunk of everyday digital work, scheduling, research, even small business operations, not demos, real usage. And once that happens, productivity explodes. I'm calling it now.
I'm pumping the brakes on that timeline. My prediction is almost the opposite. Over the next 2 years, we'll see at least one major AI-driven failure. Something big enough that it triggers global regulatory crackdowns. Not the end of AI, but a moment where everyone realizes deployment ran ahead of governance.
Wow, that's the doomer scenario.
I'd call it the systems eventually hit reality scenario.
Okay, we'll bookmark both of those. If my agent economy prediction hits, I'm taking a victory lap.
And if regulators slam the brakes after a major incident, I expect a very humble Jack on this show.
We'll see about that. Maybe we meet in the middle again like we did with that open source AI prediction last year. You were skeptical, I was bullish, and turns out it kind of exploded.
I'll admit it. You called that one earlier than I did.
I'll take the win. All right, folks, thanks for hanging out with us on AI Unchained. If you made it this far, you're the real insiders keeping up with the fastest moving space in tech.
And remember, don't just watch the headlines. Watch the incentives, the capital flows, and the regulation. That's usually where the real story is hiding.
Next time, we'll be keeping an eye on the next wave of AI model launches, the startup funding frenzy, and whether Washington or Brussels tries to redraw the rules again.
And whether any of those rules actually stick.
Until then, stay curious.
And stay skeptical.
See you next episode.